Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets. I'm your host, Jason Tardik, and I got the one, the only, the curious Canadian here with me on this intro. We are back for an episode you truly cannot afford to miss. It is with Ryan Serhant from Owning Manhattan Season 2. It's out now on Netflix, but in this episode, we get into everything, the behind the scenes of filming, production, how much do they get paid? Does he make more on Netflix or when he was back on Bravo? And all the things real estate. So I would tell you, for the first 20 minutes, we are in the weeds on real estate. What is happening in the market? Is it a buyer's market, seller's market? What should renters do? What's going on with policy? What do you think about the policy? Recently, President Trump put out a potential plan for a 50-year mortgage. Mr. Serhant, what do you think of that? All the moving parts. This one is a masterclass. Professor Serhant is here to advise us and give us all the different information. It is like no other. One thing you got to know going into this week, there was just an article came out that is talking about the median and average net worths. I've talked about it on my podcast. I've talked about it in the books that I have written. You cannot improve your net worth. You cannot improve your numbers unless you know your numbers. So take some time, understand what your net worth is. David, you are here right now. What do you think the average net worth for the ages 35 to 44 in the United States is? The average net worth of those 35 to 44.
35 to 44, which means you're probably in the median first-time home buyer. You probably got some assets with you. Maybe you got some investments. I'm going to say this could be low end, could be high end. I'm going to say 722,000.
The average net worth for the age of the head of household, 35 to 44, $549,600. Okay. Now, remember with averages, the reason sometimes you won't look at averages is because if you have really big numbers, right? Like in that 35 to 44 range, you have billionaires, it's going to bring that average up. So then what they'll do is they'll look at the median net worth. So instead of averaging those high numbers in those low numbers, if you remember sixth grade math, you just cross them out. You cross the outliers off. The median net worth, which is a better reflection of accuracy in the United States, 35 to 44, $135,600. From 45 to 54, $247,200. From 55 to 64, $364,500. From 65 to 74, the median net worth in the United States, $409,900. And the median net worth for those 75 plus is $335,600. Which makes sense, right? Like as you age and you're retired, you're taking from the money that you built and created. You're not usually earning more and more. So that puts some stuff in perspective. And that's a great topic as we go into the Serhant podcast, because we're going to talk about his biggest deal that was filmed on TV, $60 million from one of his brokers and how much he got paid. So it's good to, you know, touch grass a little bit before we get into these big numbers. But David, how about you tease the recap for our audience here before we ring in the bell with the one and only Ryan Serhant?
Recap was phenomenal. We get into a nice overdue 10-minute little recap of our personal lives, which was really nice to do. I'm off my what we were calling my 2-week paternity leave with a newborn in the household. And then as far as Ryan Serhant goes, we've talked real estate with him before. We've talked real estate with other people before. No one quite talks about it quite like he does. He puts a spin on it and energy on it, and you always take something away. And I took a bunch away from this episode. I know you will too. I'm excited for you guys. I think we just kick it to the episode.
I love it. We'll kick it to the episode. Before we do, we got to give something away to those who gave us a 5-star review. So I have a gift card to give away. Jordan, if you hear this, shoot me an email, tradingsecrets@jasontardik.com. You gave us 5 stars. Jordan said, I love everything about this podcast. There is something to learn and so many takeaways. I love the variety of guests. It combines my love of reality TV, celebrity, influencer, and business worlds, and so much more. David's input is the voice of the viewer, always makes it relatable and allows us to digest the information from the average Joe perspective. Personally, I'd love to see Jason interview some of my favorite influencers who have turned entrepreneurs with successful businesses such as Krista Horton, Jennifer Reed, Daryl Ann Denner, Madison Nelson. Keep up the great work. Jordan, thank you for that review. Send me your email at tradingsecrets@jasontardik.com. I have a gift card for you, and we are giving gift cards away every week. So please go give us reviews, and then we will give another gift card away next intro. But enough of the giveaways. Let's ring in the bell with the one, the only, the king of New York City real estate, $10 billion plus in listings, Ryan Serhant. Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets. Today, we are joined by a returning guest and one of the most influential leaders in real estate, Ryan Serhant. He is the co-founder and CEO of Serhant, now home to more than 1,500 agents with growth that have doubled year over year. He's built one of the most followed and powerful real estate brands in the world with over 9 million followers across all social media. And most importantly, he is back on Netflix with season 2 of Owning Manhattan, showing a more competitive, more ambitious, and more strategic side as he expands his empire beyond Manhattan and battles in the most cutthroat luxury real estate market in the world. Ryan, welcome back to Trading Secrets.
Oh God, now I'm stressed out.
Yeah. You know, it's funny.
Live up to that intro.
I'll tell you what, you've come on a few times now. Every time you give me a great comment after the intro. Last time it was like, dude, next time shorten it up. That was too much. This time you got to live up to it. Let's start with this. So I of course want to talk about Owning Manhattan. Before I do though, let's just get like a state of the union of real estate with Ryan Serhant. So, you know, 15% of homes were delisted in September. They said that they were delisted because they're risking selling at a loss. 70% of homes listed in September were on the market for more than 60 days. And now we talked last time you were on the podcast about supply issues, but the supply for sale is about 15% higher now than it was a year ago. Yep. I just have one ridiculous real estate story in Nashville. Looking at this home, it's been on the market for 108 days, $2.95 million. Nothing's not moving. I look yesterday, they delisted it and then relisted it at 3.15. So I hit my agent up. Hey, what was the reasoning? What did they do? They put a pool or something? No, they didn't do anything. They just saw more bites at 3.15. I feel like it's mayhem. What do sellers do? What's your take on the whole market right now?
I think the market is doing exactly what it's designed to do, which unfortunately is reward scarcity and disincentivize mobility. So you have to think about it like a game.
Okay.
If you're already playing the game, you understand the rules, you're already in it, you have skin in it, and you're just going to move with whatever way you can. If you're already an owner, you're selling, you're buying, you're whatever, for everyone who's not even in the game yet, which is most Americans now who can't afford to buy a home,
Sure. You're
not even on the field. You're not even in the minor leagues, and it's hard. So it's not a buyer's market. It's not a seller's market. It's nobody's market. You have pockets of, I would say, good volatility, right? So like Nashville's a good market where a lot of people like to buy, sell, move, right? There's a lot of things to do there, but you have to kind of hit the 360 degree boxes to have a market like that. So you have to have good jobs, good schools, good healthcare, good security, right? And an airport. If you don't have any of those, you roll the dice on whether you're in a healthy market or not. To your point, I think 45% of all new homes that hit the market this year have come off the market already year to date.
Wow.
And it's almost the end of the year. And it's not because the market's bad. It's because sellers are pricing at last year or the year before's comp data, and they're not getting their number because interest rates haven't come down meaningfully.
Right.
The cost to carry a home is incredibly expensive. And so there's just less buyers who are motivated and excited to go and spend $15,000 a month on carry plus tax plus their mortgage on a home they might have to move out of in 3 years.
Mm.
So sellers are then saying, well, I can't afford to move either.
Sure.
Because rates are high and I don't know, you know what I'm going to do. So if I don't get this number, it's not that I don't want to sell. I just can't sell. And because boomers and Gen X can't afford to sell their 5-bedroom they raised their kids in the 90s, they're sitting in those homes
Sure. With
unused bedrooms and they're not moving either because the cost for senior care is the highest it's also ever been. And no one saved enough to be able to live their later years of life with supervision. So like all of these things are all happening at the same point. And it all started in 1997 with IRS code 121. Where they created for the first time the tax exemption.
$500,000
filing jointly,
right?
Or $250,000 if you're filing as a single,
yeah,
right, on your capital gains. And the median price of a home in the United States in 1997 was $124,000.
Wow.
But the tax exemption has never changed, and it's been nearly 30 years. So income has changed, stock market's changed, wealth creation has changed, jobs have changed, right? The world has changed. But the tax exemption has not changed.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're going to people and you're saying, hey, you know, tax-free for the first $500,000 doesn't do anything anymore.
Yeah.
It's meaningless. I couldn't find you a $500,000 home in Manhattan if I wanted to. And if I did, I'd find it for you. You're not going to like it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, but here's what I'll say. It is as designed. And so there are still good deals. They're just not in yesterday's normal. people have to pivot how they think about home ownership. We're doing co-ownership for the first time in my entire career. So instead of renting with a roommate, you're buying with a roommate. Mm. You're setting up an LLC structure or a tenants in common structure where two people are going in and you can buy them out of the LLC or you can rent out their portion. Why rent if I can make an investment?
You're seeing that happen a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't even heard about that.
Yep, 100%. Like in Florida, et cetera, like three roommates coming together. They have portions of down payments, but let's go do this together. So you're seeing that. You're seeing parents buying for kids, which also is really throwing off that median age of first-time buyers. Mm-hmm. There was another stat that came out that said the median age of a first-time buyer today is now 40 years old.
Yeah.
But there's context to that because the person living in that home is not necessarily 40. The buyer and the person who's signing the deed and funding it is 70.
Got it.
Because so it's dad.
It's putting that number up.
Correct.
Yeah.
So that brings up the number.
Okay. So it's a little
scary. Occupancy for first-time home tenants is still about the same, if not like younger today than it has been.
Okay.
But life is expensive. Everything's expensive. I think the next crisis we're going to see is on just homeowner strain, right? Household strain. When is enough enough?
Yeah.
And to fix that, you need policy.
But. I want to talk about policy, but before we do, it feels like from the brokerage side, you're seeing a lot of delistings because there's also brokerages that aren't willing to like reduce their price point. It's like you're looking left, you're looking right. You don't want the market to crack. So everyone's like, we'll just delist it because we're not going to move our price point. Owning a brokerage and having, you know, so many different units out there and condos and houses, are you advising clients to delist as opposed to reduce price point?
It's not the broker is incentivized by transactions.
Sure.
And they're not paid salaries.
Yeah.
So whether something sells, for better or for worse, whether it sells for $1 million or $2 million, you're moving transactions.
Yeah.
It's the seller who's saying, well, if you can't get me my price, then I'm taking it off the market.
Interesting.
So it's the seller who's sitting there. And sometimes it's ego. Sometimes, you know, it's ego plus a little bit of vanity. But a lot of times they just can't afford to sell at a lower number.
Yeah.
Maybe their cost basis is too high. They did a huge renovation that the current buyer isn't willing to pay them for. Their mortgage rate is just too low.
Mm.
You know, you still have 90% of all home loans in the United States under 5%.
That's crazy.
Your 30-year today is sitting at just over 6%.
Right.
Like you could try to get a 10-1 ARM, so interest only, at around 5%. Still going to be expensive.
Yeah.
So, but incomes aren't growing at the same rate as housing appreciation. So like it's this kind of messy middle. The super luxury market is stronger than ever. And the first time buyer market is stronger than ever because you do have a significant amount of cash in the system. Even in New York City, over 60% of all deals this year in New York City will be done in pure cash.
Pure cash?
Yeah, not briefcases, but like a wire.
I know. But
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, just cash, which is exactly what the Fed wanted by raising the benchmark rate. You bring in cash that's sitting in accounts, in trillions of dollars, just sitting there doing nothing, raise the rate. Nah, okay, now I have to spend it. That's what you want.
Okay.
Right? You want that. And time heals all policy wounds. So, you know, people that are in their COVID interest rate locked in feeling, which is most people, especially most people who bought within the last 5 years, will eventually have life changes and need to move, and it'll bring more inventory to the market. I think next year we'll see somewhere between 10 and 15% more trades.
Okay.
Not necessarily more inventory, but more trades. And that's what you want. You want people to just move. You want investors to invest and speculate. You want banks to lend. You want liquidity in the system. And to do that, you need trades.
Do you think trades will be a result of price points coming down? Or do you think people will still trade at the same price point?
Depends on the market.
Yeah, I know. It seems like a question mark.
Totally depends on the market.
I know.
Most of the homes that have come off market, to like one of your earlier stats, a lot of that is heavily weighted in three cities, which is Miami, Houston, and Denver.
Hmm.
Because those are, with a section, this market's not that big, of like Austin, Phoenix, okay? Because a lot of those markets experience rapid price growth over the past couple years.
Okay.
And it's not that the markets are crashing. There's nothing broken. There's nothing crashing. They're just giving back some of the gains.
Interesting.
Markets go up, markets go down, and then they go back up again.
Yeah.
And they go down, they go back up again.
Okay, so we've seen that, right? Especially since 2020, up. Now it's starting to pull back a little bit. You can't give cookie cutter guidelines, but I'm asking for a cookie cutter guideline. If you're like, at what point, if there's a listing today, and I'm seeing it priced over, like, let's say in 2022, they transacted for 3 million, or 2023, they transacted for 3.1, and they're listing it today at 3.6, and they've done nothing.
Yeah.
Is there a year from a certain guideline you'd be like, if you're paying over the price point of a 2023 listing, it's yellow territory, red flag territory? Do you have like a year benchmark? Like, hey,
No. Okay. But most loan data is public in most markets.
Okay.
So you can see if that person has a mortgage.
Okay.
And oftentimes you can try to see, figure out what type of mortgage the seller has. And you can say, okay, they bought it in 2023. They have a 5-1 ARM, right? Okay. Or they have some sketchy financing. Or listen, they have a 30-year fix at 3%. You're screwed.
I like it.
They have no, there's no need
you
for
have
them
no
to ever move.
Power.
That way you understand like where am I moving? What am I doing? It's like holiday sales in December. A lot of times it's because they have an overstock on inventory and they're going to dump it, or they're going to sell it to you for cheap. Okay, I can get it as cheap as I possibly can. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Talking about policy, you saw President Trump floated the idea of introducing this government-backed 50-year fixed rate mortgage to the agencies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Yeah.
What's your take on it? For it, against it, and why?
No one's going to have a mortgage for 50 years, so it kind of doesn't matter.
Okay.
If it's something that'll lower pricing, it'll help. Yeah. They've done it in markets in Europe. They have it in Japan. It hasn't crashed the market. It is a tool to give a bank the ability to underwrite a lower monthly payment.
Mm.
Doesn't mean you can't sell your home in 3 years. Doesn't mean you can't sell it in 10 years, right? You're still going to pay your fixed rate because you're going to have principal plus interest. But if you can amortize it over 50 years instead of 30, you just bring down the monthly. You know, if you could do 100-year, people have to stop paying attention to headlines and they have to actually read articles.
Yeah, and go into it.
Right?
Yeah.
Just look at the last paragraph of every article, and that's when
the actual truth is
in the editorial.
Right.
It's never in the headline, which is there to grab your attention and get your click. It's like, you're going to die. Earlier today, it was raining, you know?
Yeah.
Read the last paragraph only ever. And it's just about the bank's ability to underwrite the loan. In case something happens to you, you miss your payment.
Yeah.
And if Fannie and Freddie can backstop it, because all the loans, especially at the jumbo size, typically are sold, right, into Fannie and Freddie.
Yep.
You know, we're basically all borrowing our houses from the federal government anyway.
Anyway, yeah.
And then we're paying the government rent disguised as property taxes to borrow the land anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're paying them to collect an income. And then we're paying them for the right to go shopping. Right? So like, we all work for the government.
Yeah.
Anyone who thinks they don't, anyone who says, I'm an independent contractor, I'm a free spirit, I'm a bird, you work for the government.
Interesting.
That is your job. You're here to provide tax revenue for everybody else. So anyone who's already saying, down with capitalism, let's go socialism, let's go communism, what world do you think we live in already?
Yeah.
We're already paying for everybody. You pay a higher percentage. I pay a higher percentage.
Sure.
He pays a smaller percentage. Sure. He pays this, that, the other. You know, we're already all chipping in at the same exact time. And if you don't chip in, you go to jail.
Mm-hmm. Simply put.
Yeah.
I think the big thing that I'll take away from that too was like, there's so much clickbait out there. And when we heard about the proposed plan of 50-year mortgages, all you would see at headlines is how much interest you would pay in 50 years versus 30 or more.
You know,
but I think your point's exactly right on, is that it's going to allow for more entry point, right? So you don't have to be paying this fucking thing off for 50 years, but it's going to reduce your monthly payment, and it creates easier entry points, which hopefully then stimulates the market. Cold mornings, holiday plans, this is when I need my wardrobe to just work. That's why I'm all about Quince. They make it easy to look sharp, feel good, and find gifts that last. From Mongolian cashmere sweaters to Italian wool coats, Quince pieces are crafted from premium materials and built to hold up without the luxury markup. Quince makes the essentials every guy needs. Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, Italian wool coats that look and feel designer, and denim and chinos that fit just right. And their selection for women is just unbelievable. This will make for a great gift at a good cost with the best quality. And how do they do it? By cutting out the middlemen and traditional markups. Quince delivers the same quality as luxury brands at a fraction of the price point. And they do it with ethical production, and all the products are made from premium materials. So Get your wardrobe sorted and your gift list handled with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/tradingsecrets for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/tradingsecrets. Free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/tradingsecrets. So then, that's obviously Trump's plan, but now in New York City, Mayor Mamdani has just been elected. And there's a lot of clickbait on both sides with this new election. How do you think, in your world, will impact real estate only?
I hope he's great.
Yeah.
I can only hope that he does things that are great for New York City, which means you have to do things at the top of the funnel and at the bottom of the funnel. Any mayor, they want to be a good one, they have to not act like a student body president who reports up to the governor, who's the principal, who reports up to the chairman of the education, which is Trump, right?
Yeah.
You have to act like a CEO, which means you have to incentivize your C-suite to stay at your company and do good work. Yeah. And you have to incentivize the interns that there's a ladder here. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
I have never seen a company work successfully where everyone is compensated the exact same when they all do different work. It doesn't work. It's never worked in the history of time. So I think it remains to be seen what he'll actually do. You know, he's not the mayor yet. If he tries to freeze rents more than they already are, but you're also not freezing taxes. You're not freezing expense. You're not freezing maintenance costs. Then any landlord is just going to abandon and give the keys back, which is what happened in the 60s, which means you have vacant homes. There is a class action from landlords, I think it's in the Supreme Court in New York right now, against the 2019 rent regulation bill, because there are now tens and tens of thousands of apartments in New York City, a city that needs housing desperately. We need affordable housing desperately. Where they're saying, your policy and your regulations, we cannot afford to update these apartments. And so we're keeping them vacant. Or we're abandoning them.
That's a little ass backwards.
Right? Completely backwards. And you can say, down with the landlord, down with the man, Dan, and I get it. But like, would you give an apartment for free and pay for someone else to live there?
Yeah.
You know, that's what you pay tax for.
Yeah.
So like you already are doing that. Yeah. So the rent freeze is incredibly difficult. I think what they've done through either City of Yes and through other policies to create more affordable housing as you build market rate,
yeah,
I think has been pretty great actually. And creating tax abatements to incentivize developers to build free market, right? Build business, but then you also have to bring in city parks. You also, to get the right to build there and to go that high, you also have to do a school. You also have to do 200 units of affordable for police officers, school teachers, right? Firemen. And you have to put it into a lottery system. I think it's like actually pretty great. And so if you run on a policy of creating versus taking, like any market and any business can be very successful. If he disincentivizes developers and home builders to create here, all it's going to do is exactly what I talked about before. You're going to make the voting base say, hoorah, but all you're going to do is further rig the system against those who can't afford to be in it, because what's going to happen to all the properties that currently exist if there's no more competition coming? Everything gets more expensive.
Sure.
Right? No new buildings. No one's going to build here. They've all gone to Florida. So everyone's just going to hold on. Would go to your point. Yeah, I paid 3.3 last year. I'll move, but 4.3.
Right.
What are you going to do if it's the only one?
Yeah.
Someone's going to pay for it. So we'll see. I don't know.
I think there's also a lot of headlines too that your clientele is moving. Do you actually see that? Is that the reality? Is that the bottom paragraph of that clip?
No. There is no place like New York.
It's just
the best city on the planet, no matter what.
New York or nowhere. You said it in your show.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
You know, New York is an incredible city that is architecturally significant in a way that like you can't do a lot to the kind of energy that it's here, because it's just here. And I'm all for making New York more affordable.
Sure.
Like, the prices are insane.
Yeah.
I'm not sitting here saying, man, $10,000 a month per bedroom, solid deal.
It's crazy. got them good.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's completely crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I want New York City to be more affordable. I want it to be safe. I want the schools to be great. And I want there to be more programs that create innovation and that are really, really geared on kids.
Yeah.
Like, that is not your question. But like, as you really, really think about the problems we're dealing with today, you know, are in part because of a lack of appropriate education 30 years ago.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah, 100%.
You know?
100%.
And so there should be incentivized programs that, one, bring companies to the city to bring more jobs. You know, like, I think it would be so cool if there was a, like, a tax abatement, because you have to have incentive. You
have to.
Where corporations, if you come to New York and you create a certain amount of jobs and you create an innovator program that gives, let's say, employment to kids from underserved schools, mm-hmm. and they get to have a job with you, if they create unique business ideas, like, why not try that?
Yeah.
Right? And then every company would want to be here. Like, wait a minute. New York City is the most creative and innovative city on the planet, and we're incentivized to also be here. Fine. I'll, you know what? I'll create 10,000 jobs in New York. Why? Why is that a bad thing?
It's a greater good play. It's a PR play. It's also probably an ROI play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can say, no, that's not right. Pay your fair share. And that's fine if you control the entire globe, because there's always another place to go. Right. Mm-hmm. Which also happened in 1994 with NAFTA. Like, why do you think we are where we are with tariffs and the cost of goods sold here is because everyone was up in arms in the early 90s about the cost of goods sold in the United States.
Sure.
And so they created NAFTA, which pushed manufacturing to Canada and to Mexico to bring down costs, which in return removed jobs and decimated cities. You go to upstate New York. Mm-hmm. City after town after town after town that used to be where they would manufacture air conditioners, manufacture microwaves.
Syracuse.
They don't do it anymore. Yeah.
Right. Carrier,
it's rough.
Right?
Utica. Like, Utica. These are markets that no one talks about. And that's just one state, because they made things cheaper, which is what everyone wanted. And everyone was up in arms. Mm-hmm. And now they're sitting here and saying, well, where's our jobs? Mm. You can't have your cake and eat it too.
Right. It comes back to bite you. I mean, this is nowhere in my repertoire to ask, but as you're bringing solutions and talking about policy and how it impacts your business, I mean, is politics potentially in your future?
No, I like my life.
In no capacity? I like my life. You like your sanity?
Yeah, man. I don't, like, it does not, would not do me any good or benefit. You know, I like having the influence that I have at, you know, my level, but I don't think politics are the same career today that they used to be.
I mean, if one day you took a shot at running for mayor in New York City, I think would severely benefit your business.
So I got calls. So when was it? I think it was the middle of July or the beginning of July. And I got two calls from very, very serious people in New York City, intense clients, hedge fund and private equity. And it both happened on the same day because it was an important day in July in New York City. And both of them, the same thing. How much money do you think you'd need to run for mayor? And I was like, what do you mean? I would never do it to make money, but in order to, like, win that race, it's going to take more than money. Also, no, I'm not going to do that.
Did you name a price or, like, what it would take?
No.
Of course, just like, hell no.
It's like, no, it's like, you do it. You have all the money. You figure it out. It's like, come on, you see, Bloomberg did it. You can do it.
They don't have the face you got, though. Everyone's talking about supplements. Well, let me tell you one that you need to know about, creatine. And it's not just for building muscle. It becomes a daily essential for your strength, focus, recovery, aging, and cognitive performance. And now Momentous is making your daily creatine routine easier than ever with new creatine chews. These bite-sized lemon-lime chews made with consistency that you'll just absolutely love. It's effortless. You just chew and go. I gotta tell you, I will take creatine before big days where I have to be mentally focused because it helps with my cognitive thinking. Each chew will deliver exactly 1 gram of CreaPure, creatine monohydrate, the gold standard single source from Germany and NSF certified for sport, which means it's independently tested for purity, safety, and label accuracy, trusted by Olympic athletes, pro sports teams, and elite military operators. Right now, Momentous is offering our listeners up to 35% off your first order with promo code TradingSecrets. Give livemomentous.com a try. Just go to livemomentous.com and use promo code TradingSecrets for up to 35% off your first order. That's livemomentous.com, promo code TradingSecrets. All right, let's go back into things that are changing and happening that we all can connect to. Federal Reserve met this morning. It looks like they're going to cut interest rates down 25 basis points. This will be the third cut of the year. We hear a lot about it. There's a lot of speculation as to what it will and won't do. When you see these cuts, does it severely impact the real estate market? What should we think about as consumers, buyers, sellers?
The market is affected by confidence more than it is pure data, right? So the three cuts we've had this year have been priced in since last year,
right?
Because they've been anticipated,
right?
Right. If they had cut it like 100 basis points, mm-hmm. then it would be a shock to the system.
Now you're cooking.
And you'd be cooking, but it probably also wouldn't be healthy. Hmm. Like yeah. you also don't want to flood the market in any yeah. way, shape, or form.
True.
Which when they raise rates, like in 2022, no one anticipated rates rising that fast. Yeah. And so you have like career deaths, interest rate deaths across the board.
Yeah.
You know, you have obviously there's, you know, office vacancy, you know, people giving keys back, you know, especially with balloons, like, you know, just rates that they just never anticipated would go from 2 to 6.
Yeah. Like that's for sure.
How do you can't underwrite that kind of movement.
Yeah.
The market appreciates predictability. Predictability on the way up and predictability on the way down. That's mm-hmm. why you see bear markets last so short now. Mm-hmm. We're in a bear market on Thursday, bull market's here by Monday. Mm-hmm. Because information is 24/7, crypto trades 24/7, right? Futures trade 24/7, relatively speaking. And so you don't have to wait anymore until the next workday to make a decision on your future. And so like the shock to the system happens so fast. And then once people know where we're going, like, are we going down 50%, 10%, 2%? Okay, I'm gonna make a bet here, okay? You go on Kalshi or you go on... Yeah. At Kalshi, or you go on Polymarket, and you're like, is the market correct? Okay, 50% of the people say it's only going to, okay, that's what it's going to be. And by Monday, we're right back up because people have priced in the bottom.
Right.
And that's why the market just checks like this all
left
the time.
And right, left and right. Talk about predictability. One of the things I think I've heard you talk about is that you believe that as interest rates are cut, divorce rates will increase. That's a nice little intersection of love and money, which we talked about on this podcast. Tell me a little bit about that prediction.
Yeah, the gray divorce.
Yeah, is that what you call it, the gray divorce?
I don't know if I'm calling it that.
I don't know. First time I heard about it was you talking about it in an interview.
But yeah, because you know we have our pulse on the market and we get the calls.
Yeah.
And so when interest, you know, a lot of people who are married, who have owned a home or two, they have loans. And those loans from 2009 to 2021-ish, right? Like I said, 90% of them are under, you know, 5%. Most of them are under 4%. And a lot of people have either, you know, adjustable rate mortgages or fixed mortgages that are somewhere in the threes. Okay. So when rates went up to in 2022 into the sixes and they went into the sevens and touched eight for a second, mm-hmm. if you're thinking about leaving your partner or divorcing, it's a financial decision. Mm. It's not just a sex decision,
sure.
right? Or it's not just a love or intimacy decision. Yeah. And so what you see is you see in-house separation into other bedrooms because the mortgage is just too good.
That's
so
wild.
Sex is bad, but the interest rate's too good, babe. And so we can't separate, right? So that's what happens.
Crazy.
So we get calls from the husband or the wife, sometimes the attorney, who are saying, hey, you know, where do you think rates are going to go? I got to figure out when my client feels that they'll be able to buy their next home should they leave their husband. I'm like, is the divorce dependent on the Fed lowering rates? And the answer, a good chunk of the time, is yes.
Yeah.
So I think as rates come down, you'll see movement in general.
Yeah.
We need older people to move.
Yep.
We need younger people to buy instead of rent. And you will see a flood of divorce that gets filed because they'll actually be able to sell their home and afford to where they're both going to go to next.
When that happens, we're clipping this. It's going to go viral.
I prospect all day long.
Yeah.
I talk to a new divorce attorney once every other day to introduce myself and our firm and let them know when this happens, we're ready to go.
So divorce attorneys are a referral source for you.
Wealth managers and divorce attorneys are the two largest referral sources in the United States.
Would have never thought that.
100%.
It makes sense.
Everyone goes to the divorce attorney or to the wealth manager before doing anything with money. Never.
Or accountant, right? Yeah, wealth manager, accountant, all those.
Yeah.
That's wild. Divorce attorneys being your biggest referral source. It's incredible. All right, you said this. Average price point and higher in New York City is higher than it's ever been before. Cost of rent's higher than it's ever been before. Median price is off the charts. These were your words. I'm curious, just how is it a year from now? We've already said you think there's going to be 10 to 15% more trade. You got the crystal ball in front of you. You got to predict. In a year from now, are those prices, is the cost of rent, all those things continuing to move up? Or do you think we see pullback? What's your prediction?
On average, you won't see pullback. I think pricing will increase somewhere between 3% and 4% over the next 12 months.
Okay.
It just has to. There's nothing else to buy. You need to. The only way you bring down prices is not with rates. You lower rates, prices go up, because it's all about the cost to carry.
Yeah.
The only way you lower prices is you either scare everybody, so fear,
mm-hmm.
and we've done that before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one time was called COVID, right? For a short period of time,
yeah.
right? You have 2008, you have terrorist attacks, you have weather events, right? People are afraid, mass unemployment, et cetera. Or you create new inventory. Like you were in Manhattan, right? One of the ways prices got lowered on the west side of the city is that Related cut a deal with the MTA and many other organizations to create new land on top of the train tracks in Hudson Yards. So the, the yards are there, but it's all trains.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, what if we could figure out a way to engineer a platform to put skyscrapers above the trains? And when they did that, they announced thousands of new apartments. All the homes in the immediate area, when people knew that was coming, immediately became less expensive because you had new inventory coming to the table. It's like a grocery store. You go to a grocery store and you go and get an apple. They might've been there for 2 days, right? It's fine. You're looking at them. But if you see someone wheeling in a bushel full of brand new apples, you're going to be like, I'll just wait for the new one.
Yeah.
Unless they mark these down. Then you're like, oh, these are fine. Better deal.
Sure.
But then some people are still going to really want the new apples.
Yeah.
It is the same thing.
Okay. All right, that's a good analogy, good breakdown. And it's, I don't know, it's just interesting to hear because there's so much speculation on a pullback. There's so much speculation on another 2008. In your forecast, you don't see it coming anytime soon.
No, I think household strain is the next crisis. Whether it becomes a consumer debt crisis, a credit crisis, there is so much cash in the system that it'll be handled relatively pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Right? The tariff crisis.
Right.
Was 5 days.
Yeah, that was quick. Hope you bought those dips.
5 days were the end of the world.
That's so
because
true.
Because things are bad, they've never been worse.
Yep.
And when things are great, they're never going to be. But dude, let's go. We want to go to Vegas tonight? Let's go.
Let's go. Let's rip. Right. Let's go.
And then you probably have, you know, I think markets are trading at much, much, much higher multiples of earnings than they should because there's mass speculation. Andrew Ross Sorkin just wrote 1929 about mm-hmm. the crash of 1929, mm-hmm. going through how they got there, starting with like the creation of the federal income tax in 1911, all the way through, talk about taxes, all the way through the bubble bursting, you know, and that was a really, really bad time. And it lasted like 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, today, if there were a massive pullback, I think it would, again, last months, not years. Mm-hmm. And because the market knows that, and because people have gone through 2008 not that long ago, mm-hmm. and 2020 not that long ago,
it'll
recover so quickly because everyone's just going to be waiting for it.
Yeah,
and when it happens, they're going to jump on it, and by Monday, it'll be gone.
Makes sense. Efficient markets, like time, I think, cures all inefficiencies. You think about what happened in 2008, think about the regulations of the banks right now. Any of those holes that were in the ship are plugged, or at least they're a lot smaller. So if something like that happens, you're right, correction becomes so much faster, which is beautiful for your business.
Yeah, same thing with housing. You know, you cannot get an adjustable rate loan because of Dodd-Frank after 2008.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you qualify at the fixed rate monthly cost. Mm. Now, if there's mass layoffs, no one's going to qualify.
Right.
Okay. So that's kind of what happened in 2008 too. There was mass layoffs.
Yep.
So it didn't matter if you were qualified before or not. You don't have the job anymore.
Right.
But there's also so many ways to make money today.
It's true.
There's
the game's changed.
The game's totally changed.
The game's changed.
Trading Secrets is supported by Yubico, makers of the YubiKey, protecting the personal and business applications and accounts that people and companies rely on every day. The YubiKey stops AI-powered cyber attacks, online identity scams, fraud, and account takeovers. It provides powerful protection, and it's easy to use. Simply tap your YubiKey to log in securely to everything from email to finance to productivity applications across all your devices. YubiKey, the original passkey, still undefeated. Visit yubico.com and use code JASON at purchase for $5 off a YubiKey 5C NFC. Again, visit yubico.com and use code Jason at purchase for $5 off a YubiKey 5C NFC.
And that's a good transition, because we're going to transition from real estate to how it's changed for you into entertainment. Because I only got so much time with you, and we have to get into Owning Manhattan. So the game's changed in a lot of ways. You got Owning Manhattan season two.
Yeah.
You talk a lot about going on the offense in season two. One thing you had to go on the offense with is also production. You got a lot of competition now. You got Selling OC, you got Selling Sunset. There's a lot of real estate market shows. So it's from a producing standpoint, when you go into season two, how are you going in the offense, not in real estate, but in production and entertainment, to be like, we will be the best real estate show out there? What are some things behind the scenes that happen?
I wanted to create a TV show no one had seen before. And you have to do that each season. Otherwise, you do not value the viewer's time, because there's too many other options. And so I put myself in the viewer's seat and I said, what would I like watch? What would grab my attention? What if it's a reality show that's shot like a docudrama and plays like an 8-hour movie that is focused on the work, that is told through my eyes with voiceover, a narrative thread throughout. And then right when people are wondering, what the fuck am I watching? I turn to camera and I look the viewer dead in the eye. And that grabs everybody. Mm. And it was a big, big risk, because I do it twice in season two at very, very pivotal moments. And it throws everyone off, because you're like, hey, I'm going to sit down and watch a reality show about real, can you rewind? And the amount, it's even getting the data from Netflix is so interesting, because when it first happens, people pause and go back 10 seconds because they think it's a mistake.
And they can track that data and they'll show you everything, the rewind back.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything. It's insane to watch.
That's true.
It's insane to watch. And I wanted to create something that was gripping, that was worthy of people's time. I get so annoyed when I spend time watching something lazy, where I'm like, you know what? What else could I have done with those 30 minutes? I could have been with my daughter. I could have worked out. I could have slept. I could have worked. I could have watched something else, right? It's content is a meritocracy now. You're only as good as your last episode or your last season. And so I really wanted to make sure that this show wasn't just visually appealing, but had story that was told in such a way that people don't fully understand what they're watching until they do. And I think we've created a new genre. I think it is a heightened occupational series that you're going to start to see more businesses start to create. And they better fucking thank me.
Last time you were on, you talked about if the show flopped, what you thought the earned media value would be, but then you were projecting what it could be if it did well. Now season two has been filmed, it's aired. What do you think the earned media value has been for season one and season two for Sirhan?
$100 million.
Damn, that's a big number. 500,000 was your estimation if it flopped. So obviously that's far off.
The world has also changed since the last time I was here. Like, Netflix is the largest distribution funnel on planet Earth, right? For quality. It's a big difference.
Yeah.
Because YouTube is massive, but it varies in quality because it's user generated.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix is not. And so people who are tuning in expect quality, which for me is a better audience to be in front of.
Mm-hmm.
We also created a show too that plays for families. More kids watch Owning Manhattan than any other reality TV show. Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy. It's actually mind-blowing, because
it's
also impactful, right? It's not.
I think it's because they also watch. I think they watch with their parents.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you can't do that with shows like Love Island and things like that. It's just not, it's not sustainable.
It's interesting too, because I think, you know, everyone plays for clicks and they play for views.
Sure.
And what's the easiest way to do that? It's through sex and language, right? How can I like sex, language, dating? Like, how can I be as controversial as possible?
Yeah.
And we took a calculated risk that just said, I think there's a big audience out there who's actually going the other way. It's like, what can I watch with my son? What can I watch with my father-in-law? Mm. What can I watch with my employees and not have to look around the room and say, hey, did you see that episode last night?
Yeah.
Like, what can I watch that's also, you know, insane and crazy? Because this show is a lot. But that also like brings some decency back to the workplace. And And I appreciate that very much, even about, like, you know, Jason Sudeikis and the team that created Ted Lasso.
Sure.
Like, that's a, like, you sit there and you, like, where's the controversy other than the fact that it's one of the greatest TV shows ever made?
Right.
It's just,
that's a good
it's
point.
Just awesome.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that, you know, has to do with how we thought about getting into the show and the story. And
do you want, you mentioned things like, I don't want people to get bored. I want to catch, like, Raid is they're getting bored. I'm going to bring them back. Do you watch your competitors like Selling Sunset or any of those and say, yeah, hey, we're not going to do that? Or is that part of the process when you're producing?
Yeah, you have to be aware, just like when you're building a building or or creating a house.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just create what you want.
Yeah.
Like, what's going to sell?
Yeah.
What are people going to actually want to buy? You know, you can make something bright orange and yay for you.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of buyers are going to pay you for that one.
Yeah.
And so we look at the competition and we see what works and we see what doesn't work. And we see what we like. And we just take a lot of inspiration from lots of movies. Like, an example, I haven't talked about this at all. There's a small movie that I really, really like. So, shot in New York on a low budget. It's called Arbitrage.
Okay.
With Richard Gere.
Okay.
It's a great movie about a hedge fund manager who lies and is in hot water. And a lot of stuff happens and the movie does not let go. And if anyone's ever, like, worked in a bank or worked in finance, Richard Gere gives a incredibly tense, stressful performance. And when that movie's over, you're just like, thank God.
Yeah.
There is a moment when that opens where he's doing the news, he's in a private jet, you start camera outside the airplane as it's flying, and then you go inside into a scene. And I borrowed from that in creating our opening and our intro.
Wow.
So there's a little nod to Arbitrage, which is a movie that not a whole lot of people have seen
because
it's like a small business film that I think is cool. There's a lot of, like, little random Easter eggs. And then there's a massive pivot and I would say a big change in arc this season that when you get to the final moment of the finale, people are so taken aback at what they just saw, that they're rewatching it. And so we also got a note from Netflix. They're like, we've never seen this many people in such a short period of time watch a reality show twice.
Wow.
So they're rewatching it.
Wow.
Because when you go back and rewatch season two, you watch it with an entirely new set of eyes.
Mm.
And then it's kind of like fun that way.
Yeah. Another Easter egg slash, I think, like a foreshadow into the entire season is, and I love this line. You haven't walked into the prison yard and fought the meanest guy in line yet, right? And you're talking about the fact that it's time to go on the offense. People are talking shit about you. And I wanted to connect, like, that theme out of the show into what I know people that listen to this podcast deal with. I think in a lot of worlds that growth equals enemies, and with growth equals mislabeling, reputational risk because of lies and rumors. And you had mentioned that your competition is stealing your agents and your opportunities by mislabeling you or by talking shit about you. How do you overcome that? How do you deal with just bullshit, lies, and mislabeling and attacks on your character and reputation? And do you think growth equals enemies?
I think you should never interrupt your enemy when they're making a mistake. And you keep your blinders on and you just move forward. And the world will pay you back, even if it's uncomfortable in the beginning. So I welcome the noise. I think it's great. I think it's fine. I'd be concerned if they weren't talking, you know? And so we create a significant amount of, I would say, engagement. 90% of it is for good. 10% of it is probably not, but it keeps the conversation going and hits the drumbeat that you need to continue to push the markets. I think it's fine. I try to be good and do what's right for everybody. And I think you have to be really nice and play well in the sandbox. And I think that's also been a big thing for our business and our growth. Like, we have, you know, people who work with us now all over the world, and I don't have to go buy them to tell them to come work with me, and we don't have to convince them.
Mm-hmm.
They're just waiting because they know that we also have built a business, I think, in the right way, which is we started with purpose. We then align the right people with the right purpose. And when you have that, you can sell any product. And when you do that, you can make all the profit in the world. And those are the four P's. Most businesses go the other way. They're a bunch of guys and they're sitting around like, hey, let's make money, right? How do we make the most money? So they start with profit.
Yep.
Like, okay, well, let's go disrupt this and we're going to sell new types of speakers. Okay, so then they go to product. Okay, well, who makes those speakers? That guy, let's go, we're going to pay him whatever it is. We're going to go raise money. Then they've got the people who can make the speakers, and then they pay a branding or creative agency to come up with some bullshit purpose. And they're like, we are here for the orcas, you know, and like, and then sometimes you get lucky. Most of the times you get burned because then people bail. If there's no profit, the product doesn't work if it's the wrong people. And when everyone realizes that your purpose was full of shit, you're just left with a dumb idea.
I like it. I like it. The PPP.
Build your complete business identity in just 10 clicks and in 10 minutes. When you want more, start your business with Northwest Registered Agent. Everything you will need to launch and protect your business all in one place. Northwest is your one-stop business solution. You'll get everything from business formation paperwork to custom domains, websites, and trademark registration all in one easy-to-use, accessible from anywhere online account. Build your business identity fast and for just $39 plus state fees. Get an LLC, domain name, business email, local phone number, business address, registered agent, and compliance in just 10 clicks and in 10 minutes. Don't wait. Protect your privacy, build your brand, and get your complete business identity in just 10 clicks and 10 minutes. You'll visit northwestregisteredagent.com/paid trading secrets and start building something amazing. Get more with Northwest Registered Agent at www.northwestregisteredagent.com/paid trading secrets.
You said people are waiting in line, which they are, but there's also people that aren't waiting in line that you have to go to. We saw that with Peter in season 2 from Corcoran. You give him 200 Amsterdam, 300 million in listings. That's what we see behind the scenes when you're trying to take top talent. Is there any other things that happen? Like, do you, are there signing bonuses? Are there backdoor cash exchanges, titles? Is there anything else that happens to bring these people on?
No, we don't buy anybody. It was one of the things that I set out in 2020. I'm like, if I have to build a business where I have to buy revenue, then I don't want to do it.
Do people buy revenue from you when they're poaching agents?
Oh yeah, for sure.
How?
Money talks. Say, okay, hey, if you leave, come to Surahand, we'll give you $250,000 if you sign up for 5 years, if you sign up for 2 years. If you stay for the 2 or 5 years, you don't have to pay us back. If you, you can leave after that. And then, you know, money's money. So people listen to the money. You know, it's like sports contracts.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, yeah, you know, like, didn't someone just leave the Mets today for $155 million to the Cardinals? Yeah. You know, even Stephen Cohen couldn't stop that one.
Yeah.
And that guy's got all the money. So, you know, yeah, people do that. But then also my thing has always been, if you come to me for the money, mm-hmm, then you're going to stay for the money, like a bad marriage. If you marry him for the money and then the market implodes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, then you're like a bad episode of that show, Billions, where it's like, how do I get out of this?
Sure.
Right? I didn't marry you for your looks or this. I married you for the money. So same thing in a company. If people are coming to you for the money or coming to you for the deal, you'll always have to give them a deal. It's like e-commerce businesses that just roll discount after discount after discount. That's the only reason you're filling your bucket. Mm. You have a hole in your bucket because no one's going to stay until you give them another deal. And eventually your discount goes to zero, which is called bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. And so for us, we've always sold the opportunity. You know, I had an agent who was at Compass in Miami. Compass has bought all revenue.
Yeah.
That's been their model. Yeah. And it's worked awesomely. Yeah.
Great. It's stock's doing well too.
Totally, totally crushed it. It's been awesome to watch, but that was their model. And we do literally the exact opposite. But we now have Compass agents who come to us, say, Compass offered me $1 million to stay, mm-hmm, but I know with you, that's just a couple deals and I can leave whenever I want. I choose freedom over golden handcuffs.
Wow.
Yeah, and I have that framed.
That's a good frame. But real estate agents, they make money off the commission, but companies like Compass will put $1 million injection to keep and retain someone.
Yeah, top talent. It's like private wealth managers.
Yeah, same thing. Okay. Yeah,
it's like you watch a Big Short, you know, there are teams within Merrill Lynch, teams within UBS,
right,
and you know, other banks will pay you, you know, a multiple of your book and bring you over because they want your client base to upsell other products.
Yeah, makes sense. On season 2, we saw the $60 million transaction. I know you've done larger transactions, but with that one, what was the, we're talking about money and I'm just curious, trading secrets, what's the commission on that?
I mean, it's Peter. Should have been me, but I'm okay. That was a great negotiation. What a great scene. Dude, this show is so good.
It is good.
I think it was 2.5% of $60 million.
I think it made
1.8.
1.8. Okay, so that's 3%. It's 3% of $60 million. So 1.8, does he walk away with 1.8? Or like how do break
split? He's a split with the company.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just, you don't have to give me specific information on that split. I just don't know. For brokerage, how does the splits range?
Depends on the marketplace.
Okay.
It depends on your deal, right? And splits range anywhere from, let's say, 50-50 to like 90-10, where the agent will take 90. but you get what you pay for. So if the agent wants nothing, they're not going to do anything. You know, they're in like Nashville, right? They pay for everything, literally. Then you're just sort of paying a fee to the house to hold license.
Got it.
And brand awareness.
Okay.
But the company doesn't make any money. Most of the real estate brokerage out there that exists, especially the publicly traded ones, like EXP, Real, all these companies, the reason they trade so low is because they make no money. The revenue is huge, but they don't actually make any money because the people making the money are the agents.
Yeah.
So they tell an agent count, a market share, and a revenue story that like is the way I think you built brokerages for the past 20 years, but it's not the way you build it going forward.
This is a selfish question, but you got over $10 billion in listing. You're at the pinnacle of all areas of your career. And you've mentioned on interviews, there's no nobility in sitting behind closed doors anymore. You're an open book. You don't care. Privacy means nothing. You've talked a little bit about maybe your wife and you behind the scenes have discussions about that as she thinks the opposite. But in this world, it feels like one misstep when you open your entire book could ruin your entire career. And you've built so much. You've come so far. You are so high. Don't you worry about some of the risks in being such an open book with one misstep? And if not, what's advice to people that are afraid to put their privacy on the line for the benefit of their lives, their financial lives, their professional lives?
You have to burn your boats, meaning you have to pick a path and go all in. You're either private or you're public today. You can't have it both ways. Where people do get burned is, I'm going to be as public as I want to be. But all of this is private. And sure, right?
Yeah.
I chose public all in from like the moment I wake up to the end of the day. You can hate it. Doesn't matter. I don't care. It's worked for me.
Yeah.
And so I'm so just authentically open and honest. I'll talk about anything that when mistakes happen and I do fuck up and stupid shit goes down, like it's just another day. And it's not like, oh, they didn't want you to see this.
Yeah.
A friend of mine and client, Dave Portnoy, of Barstool, you know, chose public. Some things his life is private, but he has gone through a significant amount of ups and downs.
Yeah.
But the market almost like expects the brutal honesty and knows that he's just gonna come out and tell it exactly the way it is. And he's a bigger entrepreneur today than he was yesterday. Because the market understands what's coming, right? They priced in the predictability.
Makes sense.
Like we talked about before.
Makes sense. All right, I have a couple more for you. Fenton Bailey, a producer on the show, he was interviewed by Variety. Some people don't believe he has it. He's referring to you. Ryan won't like me for saying this, but he is a big old softie. I found that quote from him quite interesting. You're looking back at season two. What are you most surprised that you learned about yourself?
I think that was from a Variety article yesterday. So you are on top of it. I
see that. And that was on the bottom of the article. So
I got to the meat. I mean, I know what scene he's talking about. And I think what he's saying is Ryan puts on a tough guy persona, CEO. He's probably sitting there in a suit and a tie. But deep down inside, he's just a little boy like everybody else, masquerading as a grown up. And he still gets scared and he still makes mistakes and he still wants to cry to his mom and have a cookie, and all of that stuff is true. And so like, it's all out there, and the show follows a lot of funny. I mean, the show is funny, I think, in the way like Succession is funny, but also gets incredibly uncomfortable. Like, I don't like watching people cry on TV, especially men. Like, it's weird for a guy to watch another guy cry. But when it happens, you know it's happening and it's not on purpose. Yeah, I have a breakdown with my ex-assistant, and it's meant a lot to a lot of people who have watched it. So like, for the first time, I was really, really, really able to relate to you because I felt like that 2 weeks ago when this happened, and the emails and the DMs and everything is. So anyway, so if I could help the people out there who are also, you know, struggling with figuring out who they are as human beings, just like the rest of us, they're great.
He's not just a robot. He's got the emotions. Vulnerability equals connections. And you've done it in this season again. Season 3 greenlit?
It's been 4 days, man.
Come on, man.
Give it a hot minute.
I asked you the same thing last year. You gave me the same response. So more to come. Last question I got on this is you're selling a negotiating machine. You're going to season two. Is there anything you can share about what you negotiated going into season two that was different going into season one with Netflix?
Oh, no. They're all... That's why Netflix makes so much money. Because they all their deals are pretty standard. And,
okay.
And no, you know who paid the most? Bravo.
Okay.
Like those were real checks.
Interesting.
Those were real checks. And that was a long time ago.
But what were they real paying? Checks.
They were, I'm sorry?
What were they paying?
A lot.
Like how much?
A lot. those were like if I didn't sell, like I guess, especially younger, mm-hmm. I wouldn't have needed to, and that's why you have so many reality stars mm-hmm. who just do reality and then brand deals, et cetera. They don't actually have to go do the thing.
Yeah.
I always actually like doing the thing. You can make a lot more money selling real estate.
Yeah.
But you know, they would pay a lot.
Yeah.
Netflix understands the power of their platform
mm-hmm.
and they want to have great content, but they also put out a new TV show every 7 hours.
Yeah. It's crazy.
You know?
Yeah.
An original.
Yep.
On average. And are the biggest in the world. So, you know, if anything, anybody will tell you, like, they would pay to be on the platform.
Yeah.
And you do. You invest. What season two cost me is so in the red compared to what I made making season two.
Interesting.
Until you start to count the brand value, the savings in marketing and advertising, and the business growth that we'll have, which will be, I don't know, 1,000x, which we don't have a percentage to the network for,
yeah.
You know, which is the trade-off, but you have to do the work.
You have to do work. $100 million of earned media value. The costs that you're spending are probably worth it. The last one I got for you, fellow Bachelor alum, Tyler Cameron is now an agent at Sirhan. Come on, give it to me. How's he doing?
He's great. I think he's got his first couple like cool listings.
Okay.
Every agent, well, he's based in Florida.
So yep.
Every Sirhan agent, we have agents all over Florida, is trying to work with him.
Yeah.
For various reasons, I'm sure.
Gotcha.
He's awesome. Dude, Tyler is the nicest, coolest, calmest guy. Like I'm sure he has bad days, but you wouldn't know it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like he just is, and he's a lot of dude.
He's a big motherfucker.
Dude, he walks in
shit.
He walks in sideways yeah. through a door, and he doesn't even need to.
Yeah.
That's a power move.
That's a
I'm
power
start
move.
Doing that. You walk in and just move in sideways.
Yeah.
Because it gives the person in the room like, did he just need to do that? Or his what kind of shoulder workout does he do?
That's right.
It sends a message. It's like the silverback gorilla standing up. Tyler Cameron walks in sideways. Yeah. It's awesome.
It's awesome.
He's the best.
It's incredible. He is the best. We're big fans of Tyler. So I'm glad to hear he's doing well. Well, dude, I could ask you a million more questions, but we only got some time. I appreciate you coming on Trading
Thanks
Secrets. Always good to have you here. But we got to wrap with the Trading Secrets. So give me something in the last year. Maybe a trading secret you learned about yourself, real estate, money, relationships, whatever it could be, but something different than the trading secrets you've given us in the past.
A lot of my life over the past year has been growing this business with great people
mm-hmm.
and learning what it's like to hire and what it's like to fire and how to have difficult conversations. Mm-hmm. And I have learned now the hard way that great people are uncomfortably expensive, mm-hmm. but bad people will cost you a fucking fortune.
Mm, or a lifetime. Or an entire career and entire legacy. It's a hell of a trading secret. And I think for me, watching back season two and having you on over the years, I think the trading secret I've taken away is it's like the areas are discomfort that you continue to step in, like going from defense to offense and having these tough conversations and putting yourself in positions where you're crying on national television in front of the entire world. It's these positions of discomfort that actually lead to continued growth. It's just that so often we get more financial safety, we get more fame, you get more whatever it is, notoriety, and you actually stay clear of those. And I think one thing you just do, you do it every day. You continue to step in that area of discomfort, which creates unbelievable growth. And so many people avoid those. So that's a trading secret I've learned from you in the last year. And thank you for coming on the podcast. Where can everyone find everything you got going on?
Just go to Netflix and watch Owning Manhattan.
Okay, I like it. That's his request. Go to Netflix, watch it, and you're competing against some big, you got Stranger Things right
dude,
there. You got P. Diddy out there.
Come on.
Give him a break.
The girl from Lena from Game of Thrones decided to drop like
she's
a new TV show.
She's got like
the
Beast and Me's out there.
Insane,
but you're still ripping in the top 10. Can't be stopped. Ryan Sirhan, thank you for being on Trading Secrets.
Ding, ding, ding. We are back with the recap. The one, the only, the curious Canadian is back on the ones and twos from his old paternity leave. I'll tell you what, David, you leave for 14 days and my God, has the world turned upside down in the Trading Secrets world. All for the best. How you doing? Welcome back. And let's make sure we got a recap with Ryan Serhant. How you doing?
Good. It's great to be back. 2 weeks paternity leave. I don't know if it was actually paternity leave, but life is busy right now. But life is great. Life is great. We have another little male, little boy, Caleb. Caleb Anthony Ardwin is in the house. And Mama is doing great. Ashley is doing amazing. And let me tell you, Jay, the second time around, it's just so different in so many ways. Well, first of all, you're just, as a parent, you're so much more confident. You really are able to, the biggest difference is seeing what they become right in front of your eyes. So Carter's 2.5, Caleb's 2 weeks old. To see what they become allows you to soak in those little moments so much more, because the best way I can explain it is when I change little baby Caleb on the changing table and he's this little tiny little nugget. He's so small. He's so delicate. I change his diaper. I'm all fragile. You know, you put him down and then Carter needs his diaper changed. I'm lifting Carter up and it's like a dinosaur's on the changing table. It's like two different species. So to see how fast they grow, when Carter met Caleb for the first time, I bawled my eyes out. It was more sweet, more emotional, more connected than I ever could have imagined. And Carter's being an amazing older brother. So it's been good so far. It's been good. He's eating well. Ash is crushing the breastfeeding. He's sleeping really, really well. So as far as having a toddler and a newborn goes, it's going as good as it can. So
it's unbelievable. How long was Ash in labor for?
8 minutes.
What?
Yeah, 8 minutes. It was.
Wait, I've never heard of anything like that ever.
It was so wild compared to the first one with Carter. She pushed for 3.5 hours, and so she was in labor for eight minutes.
Yeah, it was. Is that a world record,
dude? It was. I could do a whole podcast on like the play by play of it all, but they at 11 p.m. they're like, all right, you should get your sleep, like epidurals, and you should be good. And then like as I'm like trying to get some sleep, she's like screaming in pain. And in the last delivery, when she got epidural, she couldn't feel anything, to the point where like they had to decrease it. So I'm like, something's not working here. So they came in, checked her. She had gone from 7 centimeters dilated, 10 centimeters dilated in like 15 minutes. Like, it's time to push. And 8 minutes later, the baby was out. And it was
damn,
like,
man,
what?
How much did he weigh?
He weighed 6 pounds, 11 ounces. So he was a little nugget, and he came 3 days early before his due date. But he was great. She did amazing. Like the difference in her personal recovery from Carter to Caleb has given her so much more like energy, confidence, enthusiasm. Mm. The breastfeeding's gone 10 times better. So she's like super mom right now. I was just gone for 3 days on a hockey road trip. You know, she had the toddler, the newborn. She's in her element right now. It's great to see. So
unbelievable. So glad to hear Ash is doing well and baby Caleb's doing healthy and well. And that's a beautiful thing. You got to love it. And how about the sleep regimen? You sleeping?
We are pretty good. For anyone out there, listen, if I could get a sponsored ad from anything, it should be the Snoo. For those who don't know what a Snoo is, it's an electronic motion and sound detected bassinet where you put your baby in there. It's got 4 different levels and motions, all that replicate sounds that they're familiar with, and it helps them self-soothe. And Caleb's sleeping. Last night he slept 3.5 hours, woke up for a feed, 3 hours, woke up for a feed, and then his first 4-hour stint at less than 2 weeks old. So he's crushing it. Ash is crushing it. The Ardwin household is full of love. It's full of baby crying. It's full of poopy diapers, but the best way possible. But enough about my personal life. Before we get to Ryan Serhant, congratulations to you, Mr. Jason Tardik. He is Instagram official with the lovely Catherine Hurley. And how are you feeling about it?
Feeling good. It was good. Catherine's birthday Friday. And I mean, it's fun to share. You know, it's so funny because I've been private, obviously, about this relationship for a little bit here. And this podcast actually with Ryan Serhant, like I was pretty confident, like I was excited and just feel so comfortable with where Catherine and I are and what our future looks like that
I was, you know, excited to share that story. And, but I was hesitant too, right? Cause there's a lot of, I don't know, there's especially just looking in the rearview mirror, there's a lot of headaches that can come with that. Right. But then Ryan actually kind of motivated me in this podcast. Like when you live in that gray area, it's just not a great gray area to live. Like either get out there and open your life up or don't, you know what I mean? But this like 2026 going into it, like half in, half out, like what are you doing? You know, and he talked with him and I talked a little bit about that, of course, after the podcast too. And I got some different advice from him. And yeah, I mean, I feel great about it. You've met her. She's one of the most special people in the world. And yeah, so excited to share that. So it's exciting, brother. It's exciting.
It should be exciting. I can't wait. We're about due for JTA 2025. And I my favorite part of JTA is always playing the teaser from what your 2025, what you thought it was going to be like, to seeing how it actually was. And then I'm excited now that you're in this place in your life to hear what your 2026 teaser will be, because you're definitely in a much more different place than any of the JTAs that we've done before. And I will say that Catherine she's so sweet. When I was able to come out to Nashville and meet her, for the first time, it just felt so natural. She was so inviting, welcoming, wanted to be around, truly seemed really supportive of you, really wanted to know your best friends, which is, you know, for anybody, you want it to feel like, you know, that your best friend is dating their best friend, and that you all want to be in a room and hang out and get to know one each other. So she's great. So definitely Curious Canadian approved on that.
Curious Canadian approved. Yeah, I remember the first time you guys met, I would just be like doing my thing and you two were like in the weeds for 45 minutes just talking about like all things life.
Yeah, it was great.
This is great. So then I guess, you know, one of the questions we'll have to ask everyone is, I've obviously talked a lot about our non-for-profit, Wax for Walks, The Rescue. Maybe we have her come on one time. Maybe even JTA she pops in. I don't know.
Maybe.
You guys give us 5 stars and let her know, should we have her on as a guest? I don't know. You know, that could be fun. Talk about the non-profit rescue world.
That is a world that's near and dear to your heart too. And I just saw that Teddy has a brother. Now is that a stepbrother? Is that Catherine's dog? How does that work?
That's Catherine's dog. But we've gone through the like, especially with rescues, and they're based on, you know, their different traumas and things like that. You got to be very, very intentional with how you integrate them and you have them meet. And like we worked with the trainer to do it, because you just never know reactivity, and they get along so well. Like they're best buddies. They're hanging out left, right, and center. They're always together. So yeah, Moose and Teddy. Moose and Teddy Bear.
I love
your dynamic duo, baby.
I love the name Moose. That's good.
Yeah, and he's a beauty.
It's the same thing with Carter and Caleb. TikTok, they showed us all the ways of how to have your toddler meet your newborn, so he wasn't jealous.
Oh,
that.
Wow.
We followed all the steps. There's really two main things we followed.
Which were, like, I mean, trading secrets. You got to give them.
So number one is get your toddler a gift and wrap it up and say it's from his little brother. So when he walks into the room, he opens the gift from his little brother. So he opened this big, like, dinosaur truck thing that carried cars, dino cars. So he was so excited. And then don't have the newborn in the arms. Have the newborn in his little bassinet so that he doesn't see that he's, like, connected to you and he's, like, all alone. So we had him open his gift. He was all hyped. And then he heard Caleb cry in the other room and he goes, "Baby's here." And he ran over and he saw him, gave him a big hug, gave him a big kiss, and he was just obsessed with him. So it was like, I'll send you the video after this.
Look at the boys.
Yeah, look at us. We're growing up. We're growing up here.
Holy smokes, you know? The cool thing is, you know, what's really cool about doing this is we're going on almost 5 years. And if we go back into the, you know, the old episodes, we go back to 2021 versus 2025. You think about how many different chapters and eras and roller coasters and life detours we've both been on. It feels like this one's a fun one in many ways, and obviously different chapters, but exciting for both of us. But that is so cool. I can't wait to see that video.
Very exciting. Listen, this has been a 10-minute recap of our personal lives in the last 2 weeks. Ryan Serhant, he's a 3-time guest. So you know what, Ryan? We're taking this recap. We've recapped you two times. We're going to recap you again. We are taking our time right now on the recap to give the listeners a little update on our personal lives before we get into all of your genius that you displayed in your podcast today.
And that's a great transition to him. So three-timer around here, obviously Owning Manhattan season 2, it's out right now. It's crushing it. You got to love having someone like Ryan Serhan on because you got the pop culture vibes. You have the business side, which of course is real estate. And then we're living in this world right now where just no one knows what is next. Houses are sitting on the market. It's not a buyer's market. It's not a seller's market. So many questions. You're seeing, of course, a lot of different policy and political change from our country to specifically New York City where he operates. And there's just so much to talk about. So I was very excited, David, to hear what you thought of this episode because there were so many technicalities, but then there were also so many generalisms and there was also pop culture.
Yeah, I mean, he's a genius, like I alluded to there. I have my notes. The first 10 minutes of this was an actual masterclass. Lots of little definitions that I didn't exactly know, but I felt like I could still follow. I remember clicking into the episode as I was listening because I had all these notes down. It was like 8 minutes and 50 seconds into the episode. I said, that's it? How? Like, I actually think my brain's going to explode once I hit the 57 minute mark because I can't actually retain all this stuff. So it was incredible. There was one definition I actually had no clue. He said 51 arm. Mm-hmm. So yes. I had no clue what that was.
So five is like a 5-1 arm. So arm, A-R-M, right? That's just... it stands for adjustable rate mortgage. That's what the ARM stands for. Okay. So let's just break through each of them, what they mean. So the 5 is going to be how long your interest rate is locked in for and doesn't change. So for 5 years, your interest rate is locked in. It will not change in 5 years. The 1 means that after the 5-year period, your rate will adjust annually every year based on whatever is happening in the market. So that's like your 5-1. Now, the big thing about that is your interest rate will actually be lower because if you think about like a 30-year fixed rate mortgage, think about the risk that a bank has to take in because how much interest rates can change within 30 years. With 5 years, it's only locked in for 5 years. So like if interest rates go up big time in 5 years from now, your payment's going to go up big time, but they'll usually have a lower interest rate on a five-year one arm. So that's what an ARM is, an adjustable rate mortgage.
That makes a lot of sense. That's actually what all my fellow Canadians function under for their mortgages. When I tell them that we do 15 and 30-year fixed, they can't believe it. They're all 5 years, and so their payments do adjust big time over five-year periods as well.
Yeah, that's like the negative with it is that there's like that payment uncertainty. You just don't know what's going to happen, right? And then the other thing is that market risk. If like in 7 years, the interest rate goes up big time, you could be screwed.
Yeah.
What it's really good for is like the home buyers who, if you know that you're going to sell or you're going to refinance or you're going to do something within a short period of time, or maybe have a new renter in or something like that, I don't know, like within a 5-year period, it's a great time to lock in a very discounted rate. And I think also those who know that like income strong, they've built good wealth, they expect to make money on their money and they're expecting future income to come in that are at the same level or higher, they know they'll be able to accelerate pay down, but then have a low interest rate for that period of time. And then people that are just trying to get a low payment from the get-go. So those are the things to think about when you decide what structure to go with. And like the best, especially in the States, is like just talk to your mortgage banker and they'll walk you through all of them.
Things to know. Homeowner problems 101 right there. He's helping us with them. Another thing he was helping us with is proving that he is an encyclopedia. I couldn't believe how well this guy, you know, I shouldn't be surprised. He's one of the best in his industry. But when he was spitting out little, like he was going on his little, answering questions with such passion. And then he starts throwing out, you know, Jason, it all started in 1997 with the IRS code 121 and da-da-da-da-da and tax rates. And then in 1994, trade NAFTA, decimating cities with manufacturing hubs. And 1960, the rent freeze and all the homes went vacant. I was like, Jesus, this guy is giving me 3 college credits in 27 minutes. So I don't know, man.
There's two takeaways there.
Yeah.
I want to give you two trading secrets there. Number one, if you want to be a leader in whatever field it is, you better know the history of that field and what has determined where things have been and why, because credibility is massive. So when he's talking to these billionaires or 100 millionaires, multimillionaires, whatever it might be, these people with big power, you have to understand, what is everyone going to ask for? What's happening next? What do you think? And he says, well, I can't tell you what's going to happen next because I can't predict it. But what I can tell you is what's happened in the last 200 years. Let's go through it. So whatever industry you're in, you better know the history of it because that's going to be credibility. Number two, he is genius. We know that. He's extremely smart. However, there's always a strategy and calculation behind those people. And that alludes to number three. Is I listened to a lot of his recent podcasts in preparation for this. And I will tell you in each of those podcasts, when not even asked about the topic, right? Those were some speaking points that he stepped into. So you can tell those are speaking points that he's memorized, that he understands that the people that listen to him need to know, and that he builds credibility when speaking about them. And everyone listening right now can do that too in their jobs and in their fields.
Are you at all, I'm listening to this episode and he's been on our podcast three times. He might be the only three-time guest other than Tyler Cameron. Maybe Blake
Justin
Horseman.
Clay is too, I think.
Maybe. But yeah. I'm thinking, man, this guy's kind of a big deal. And not that you're not a big deal, or I'm definitely not a big deal. And our podcast is great, but it's not like it's like Call Her Daddy like level podcast. This guy's making time three times to come on our podcast and really talk about the same thing. Like he's talking about the real estate market and he's talking about the shows that he's doing, and he's really not going in depth about the reality piece. He's really going in depth about this. Is it ever like dawn on, like, I don't know, to me, I'm like, this is I feel like he's a big deal and he keeps coming back and there's something that you're doing that's really impressive. And do you guys have like a really strong relationship outside of when we're on the podcast or in a business? Do you hang out? Have you ever gone for drinks? Do you guys hit each other up? Do you small talk? Like, I'm just, give me a BTS on that.
Yeah, I think, so the first thing is not really. Like, I saw him at Surf Lodge this past summer, hit him up. We talked for a while, shoot the shit. But like, we're not like boys, I would say. That's one. And two, I would say he just gets it, man. Like, I think in this space, there are so many people with such large egos that they're like, oh, I'm only going to go to this podcast or this podcast. And depending on what you're trying to achieve, most of the time that's not going to be the right play, because what he's trying to achieve is all different niches and different places find out who he is, and he throws a blanket on them everywhere. So you're seeing right now, he is very strategically going on the right podcast in the right niches that have the right audiences. He's collaborating with people on social media that have all different demographics and age groups. Everything from like doing, you know, some of those like TikTokers who just do stunt tricks, like where they like they bounce eight ping pong balls into one ball.
Love those guys.
He's doing stuff like that, to being with like the big YouTubers, to being on certain business podcasts. So my point is, he gets it. Right. And we're a show that does a ton of listens every single week. And we're on social media. We're getting the most views. We're doing like 5 million impressions on social media a week. Like, that's crazy that the podcast is generating 5 million eyeballs through our clips on TikTok and on Instagram. So, you know, I think he just gets it. And he also has respect for us. Right. Like, I listen, like, with all due respect, I listen to 2-3 podcasts, like I said, in preparation. These people don't know how to interview them, and they ask the same fucking questions, and they don't know how to talk his language. So I think we've earned his respect.
Well, it aligns a lot with what he said about selling Manhattan, how he took a risk because he did want to have a show that everyone could watch. They could watch with your kids. They could watch with your, you know, your colleagues. He kind of took the Ted Lasso approach where, like, you know, he wants everyone to be able to watch it. So him going on all these podcasts with all these different, you know, like you said, the TikTokers and our audience, it makes a lot of sense. So clearly a smart guy. He gave some unbelievable.
One more thing. I want to say, if you have an exclusive, right? Like, you have a big announcement, or you just haven't done anything in a while and you need one big splash, that's when you try and like land a Call Her Daddy, you know? But when you're trying to promote something like a show, that's why, like, in Ariana Grande, it's not like she goes on one podcast. She goes on six talk shows and six live, you know, night shows and podcasts and red carpets, because she's got to promote Wicked. Even the biggest of the best in the biggest spaces do it. He just gets it. You know, he just gets it. And like anyone that's out there, when you're promoting something, even if it's a small startup with 10 followers today, you got to find your network and make a splash. Like, you got to get out there and do it.
I'm going to end with my my three zinger points. Let's just say things that zinged me. He said them and I was like, damn, this one depressed me. We're all basically borrowing houses from the Fed. We're paying the government rent disguised as property taxes to borrow the land. We're paying and then paying them to collect income, then paying them for the right to go shopping. We all work for the government. We're all here to provide tax revenue for everyone else. That was a very sombering, realistic, depressing moment. and then I did love the quote, never interrupt your enemy when they're making a mistake. I just thought that was like a good business PR type, like, I'm just going to keep this in the back of my head and use this when it comes time. And then I'm going to end with how he ended with this trading secret. In the business world, managers, all these things, when you're responsible for a budget, etc., he learned the hard way that great people are uncomfortably expensive, but bad people cost you a fucking fortune. I loved that. It goes hand in hand with the biggest takeaway I've ever had on this podcast from a trading secret, which is hire slow, fire fast. I just thought that those all go together, and they're from really smart people who manage a lot of fucking people. And I just loved how he kind of tied a bow on that. And that was my biggest takeaway, was his trading secret.
Yeah, that was, I mean, incredible trading secret, incredible guest, such a sharp, smart guy. It's funny, just even these takeaways, like after it, I just, again, this is like, Ryan, I know how busy you are. I can't tell you how much it means that you're giving us this time. So thank you, because every time he comes on this podcast, I learn something new. And do we talk about similar things on this podcast? Sure, but we talk about them in times of increments that are like a year later, and the speed at which this man changes his professional life year over year, it's crazy. Fun to watch, fun to be part of, definitely inspires and motivates me. So I hope everyone enjoyed this episode. I hope everyone enjoyed the recap, a little personal update, and of course, a little professional breakdown of the one and only Ryan Serhant. David, anything before we wrap?
I got a baby crying upstairs. The toddler's past his bedtime. I got to go. We got to run. It was great seeing your face again.
I love it. We got two dogs in this household and two babies in David's. It's a beautiful thing, guys. Give us 5 stars. Let us know what you're looking forward to. And thank you for tuning into another episode of Trading Secrets, one you can't afford to miss.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.